and Ben, the man from land, from RE/MAX Property Pros. Ben, good morning. Nice to have you along with us.
Thanks, Greg. Good to be here.
And exciting win for the Packers. Good game yesterday, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. I was pleasantly surprised.
I was a little nervous at times. I kind of was in my lucky spot just standing in the corner, keeping my fingers crossed, but it turned out okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, going to be a tough one, though, next Sunday when they have to play against Mike McCarthy and the Cowboys.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Got to win anyway, so Miles will play him right away, right?
Absolutely.
Good. Hey, Ben, good to have you along here. I know you're planning to be on the radio with us probably the first Monday, unless it's a holiday of the month, and we're excited to have you on for the radio programs here coming up in the new year ahead. You are known as Ben the Man for Land. Tell us a little bit about your background, because I know as we have talked over the years, you have a very interesting background and how you got to be known as the man who knows so much about land.
Sure. Yeah. As a matter of fact, right out of high school, you know, a lot of us go off to college, and I ended up choosing forestry as my bachelor's degree. And finished with that. I graduated in 2001. Hard to believe it's been over 20 years ago now.
Time flies.
Anything in the 2000s, you know, folks in my generation, anything in the 2000s doesn't seem that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
But 22 years ago is when I walked across the stage and had high hopes of practicing forestry. And, you know, the career has taken me, the first half of my career was in the southeastern U.S., so all across the Appalachian Mountains, wow. The Pine Barrens of Georgia and Alabama, ended up in Arkansas and Oklahoma for a while. And that's one of those areas, you know, Oklahoma, you don't think about Oklahoma having topography and hills and mountains. But, you know, that southeast and that eastern edge of Oklahoma is actually very hilly, very beautiful, a lot of trees. Mm-hmm. And even the, you know, the Ouachita Mountains and Arkansas is very hilly, kind of reminds you a lot of the Appalachians. But in 2010, found myself up in the Northwoods of Wisconsin, and it seemed like a lot of my experience in the southern U.S., everything was different. Some of the harvest methods and timber management methods were similar, but a lot of differences there. All the tree species are different, mm-hmm. except for just a couple. You know, we have maples throughout the U.S. and some of the pines, like white pine, has a broad range. But it seemed like I did have a steep learning curve when I first came up here. So the first bit of time here in Wisconsin practicing forestry, I was with the Oneida County Forestry Department.
Okay.
And learned a lot from some great foresters that had spent their entire careers in northern Wisconsin. And big shout out to Paul Feeney, who was a great mentor with the Oneida County Forestry Department, and absolutely loved working with Paul. And then had a stint with the Great Lakes Timber Professionals Association.
Oh, sure.
Ended up getting into teaching a little bit, and some of the SFI we can't really say certification, but educational courses there. And I got back out in the field as a timber cruiser and a buyer for a lot of our local producers.
Okay.
Here in the Northwoods. So that is where things started to gravitate more toward real estate, because I was in the private industry sector of forestry. So I'm dealing a lot with loggers that are and timber buyers that are looking to invest in land, landowners who have land for hunting and wildlife purposes, but are pulling an income from timber resources and working with them, managing their timber for their goals. And I thought, you know, I could really help these clients out a lot better if I had a real estate license. So many of the clients were interested in liquidizing some of their real estate assets in land, so they wanted to sell. Some were looking at adding to their ownership. So I thought, man, if I had a real estate license, I could help these folks in the selling and purchasing as well. So in 2018, can't remember how bad the winter was then, but it was apparently slow enough for me to go through the real estate course online, and completed that test, passed it first attempt in April. So April of 2018, I started practicing real estate part-time. I was a part-timer in 2018 and 2019. And when 2020 rolled around, I had been chewing on it and decided we're going to make this full-time jump. So in 2020, we made the full-time jump to real estate, and forestry has kind of been on the back burner. Every now and then I'll do some forestry work or write some letters or mark some timber, but for the most part, all of my time has been sucked up in real estate, and I don't see any turning back.
You really love it, don't you?
I do. I love helping the people. You know, when you get someone that's serious and they're goal-oriented and they know what they want and they just got to find it, I mean, I really enjoy that. You know, we can put in front of them, here's an option, go walk it, you know, corner to corner, line to line, and I just love talking about, you know, what they're looking at, the benefits and drawbacks of each piece and how it fits, and just to see their excitement when they're walking what could potentially be their next piece of land.
Sure. And we wanted to talk a little bit today about the deer harvest and folks with land that they use for primarily deer hunting in a lot of cases. The numbers seem to be going down a little bit, Ben. Are there opportunities for people with those tracts of land to do things that would help improve their land, help support, you know, the deer harvest or other things that they're doing on their property?
Absolutely. There's a lot that can be done, especially this time of year. Number one, scouting. After deer seasons, that's the time you want to go out in the woods, and we typically have snow this time of year. Animals are easy to track. Their patterns are easy to follow. So after the deer season, you know, these animals, their habits change when the Orange Army hits the woods and they, oh, now it's time for our contingency plan. We start hitting the thickets, or we start going nocturnal, and technology nowadays with game cameras, even cell phone cameras that can show you live video feeds or photos of what's going on your property at any given time. You know, I was just talking to Amy out front, and she was telling me some stories about using their cell phone cameras to see what's going on as far as, you know, trapping and hunting and things like that.
So it's incredible.
You know exactly. You can more easily pattern the animals on your property, know when they're passing through, and adjust your hunting practices accordingly. So now we have, you know, January, all the seasons have ended. We can get out here on this, you know, little skiff of snow that we have and see where they're moving compared to pre-season scouting, where the animals have settled back into a more calm routine when there's not as many hunters out there. So we can compare what's going to happen when hunters start entering the woods in droves, what's going to happen, and be prepared for that ahead of time. For instance, one of my best bucks that I ever harvested, I noticed that the deer were getting accommodated to the ways that we entered the woods, the time that we entered the woods. So, you know, myself, my uncle, my cousin, my dad, we would ride the ATVs down this one specific trail every morning about 45 minutes, a half hour before daylight. And when we would turn off the machines, you could hear all the deer escaping from this field down into the woods. And I thought, I'm going to try something different. You know, I'm actually going to tell them, you guys, go ahead. You know, go ahead, do what you do. I'm going to try something different. Don't worry about me. And I ended up making a big circle the opposite direction, way, way, way around the trail that we normally took. And I also did this about 2 hours before I knew they were going to enter their stand. So what that did was that allowed me to get around all those deer that were in this field that they would drive through to get to their stands, right? Went all the way around, climbed in my stand, took a little nap, and what woke me up was the sound of the ATVs, you know, putt, putt, putting down the trail. And as they turn their machines off, here come the deer, just running down into the woods to escape them, the ones that the deer had patterned. You know, as hunters, we think about patterning the animals that we're after. And here, the deer had patterned us and knew how to avoid us. So I changed it up a little bit, and I actually had to wait for enough daylight to pull the trigger on the buck that I had my eye on, because he was basically standing underneath of me, underneath the stand, totally unaware of my presence. And so sometimes you have to know what they're going to do and get ahead of that curve to harvest that buck you've been after.
Yeah, that's a great story.
So
yeah, those animals are really clever. I don't, you know, I'm not a hunter. I don't know, but boy, I see them, and I think that is a clever animal, because they just seem to know when the hunt starts. And, you know, a lot of them disappear, and with a story like yours is a way maybe to counteract that, the usual thing hunter do, and then, you know, maybe change it up a little bit and have some success. But
absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, that's what they do. That's their life, you know, from, you know, 24/7, 365, they are in the woods. You know, they notice these changes, and for each year that whatever animal it is that they're out there surviving, they pick up on that stuff. I mean, think about us. We have our routines. We have the time we usually wake up for work,
yeah,
the places that we go for breakfast or coffee, the phone calls that we make. We have our routines. We notice if there's a change in that routine. You know, here, right here at the studio,
yeah,
there's a change in routine with Jeff being ill,
yeah,
and you know, we all am wishing him a speedy recovery. But you know, there's a change in that routine. Even all the listeners this morning, oh, Jeff must still be sick because he's not on the radio this morning. We notice these subtle differences. Animals are the same way. That is their domain. That is their home, and they notice when something is awry.
Sure. They are smart creatures, that's for sure. Our Monday morning conversation, Ben Parsons is with us from RE/MAX Property Pros. Ben, known as the man for land. What's the good way to get a hold of you? I want to mention that a couple of times during the program. What is the best way? I know you always have your cell phone with you, and I know you have a nice you know, email site and things like that. What do you like best?
Absolutely. Well, usually a call or text is best.
Okay.
At area code 715-550-5683, or my email is benthemanforland@gmail.com.
Good. And you are in and out of the office a little bit too, and I suppose sometimes in Rhinelander, sometimes here, wherever you are in the Northwoods area, you probably stick your head in the door and say hi to your other agents, huh?
Absolutely. You know, I typically cover anything from Highway 64 north all the way to the UP line, between, you know, Highway 13 over, you know, Prentice, and all the way east. You know, I've gone as far as Marinette County. It's a little bit of a haul to get over there, but I do cover a pretty big area.
Sure. You know, we're talking about the deer harvest being down a little bit. Are there things that people can do with their property to help, in, you know, maybe improve that deer harvest a little bit, gather some of those animals to their property?
There is. You know, we talked briefly about, you know, their habits and getting to know their habits. We can do things as landowners to curb those habits into helping them to build their numbers. Hunting season is over, and we've got a full, you know, less, well, 3/4 of the year before we go back out intending to harvest. So creating habitat, creating safe zones, creating food sources is, these are all things that we can do now to get ahead of the next season, to create new routines and new habits for these animals. You know, you think about habitat, animals need a place to hide, especially our game animals, our white-tailed deer, our wild turkey, our ruffed grouse. You know, those are probably the top three game animals in our region. And if you think about it, you know, these animals can't fight back. All they can do is evade.
Mm-hmm.
They can evade predators. So if we create habitat, not just, you know, oftentimes we look at land, I want big trees, open forest, so I can see as a hunter, so I have the advantage. Well, that's part of the reason why some folks aren't seeing the animals, because they're going where they feel the most comfortable.
Right.
An effective hunter is going to go where the animals feel comfortable, where their routine is. Getting between these bedding areas and these feeding areas and knowing when the animals are going back and forth from one area to the other and kind of cutting them off without ruining a safe zone. You know, it's important that we establish a safe zone.
Sure.
For these animals when they evade, because it helps keep them in those routines. You know, we see a lot of effort going into kind of cutting snags and small trees, but not cutting them completely off, just kind of laying them over, and to create areas for, you know, animals to get under. Turkeys like to nest under that, deer like to bed under that. They find food, they can hide. It looks messy.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk to any wildlife expert, and they're going to tell you that the uglier the land, the better it is for wildlife habitat. I deal with clients and customers on a daily basis that say, well, I don't want to buy something that's been cut over, that's been freshly cut, not realizing that the first handful of years after that timber harvest, when it's really thick and hard for us to get through, it's also hard for a lot of predators to get through as well. And that's where these whitetail numbers will congregate. There's food ready for them. There's bedding ready for them. They really don't have to move much for the resources that they need. They can stay hidden. One of their best defenses is their hearing. Well, when the woods are thick, when the forest is thick, they can hear something coming from a long way away and avoid that predator. So creating these safe zones, and we hear a lot about food plots.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that will turn a target buck nocturnal is hunting over a food plot. So we've seen a trend develop where you have a food plot and then you have a what we call a kill plot.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll hunt over this area that has food, but we won't hunt over this other area. So this food plot over here on another piece part of our property is reserved as a safe zone.
Okay.
So things like that will help not only draw the animals to your property, but will help keep them there as well.
Well, that's good advice. Makes common sense, but a lot of people don't think about it. It's more... like you say, having the clear zone for you as a hunter, easier to get to, easier to see, you know, makes it more dangerous for the animals, and they're smart enough to know that.
Absolutely. You know, we have a lot of public land.
Yes.
Up north.
We're lucky, aren't we?
We are. Yep. We really are. And there's a ton of recreational opportunities out there, not just hunting, mm-hmm. but snowshoeing, hiking, cross-country skiing, bird watching. There's so many things that we can do. Just go out and get your steps in for the day and enjoy fresh air. And one of the things that I like to, I don't want to say push, but one of the things that I like myself about some of the parcels that I sell is that if they border public access land,
mm-hmm.
whether it's county forest, state forest, national forest, or MFL open, and that's something else that we could get into at another date, is mm-hmm. The Managed Forest Law Program. And but you have these open access. Personally, what I could see doing is if I bought a 40 or an 80 that borders public land, I wouldn't be against establishing my entire privately owned parcel as a safe haven. I wouldn't hunt my own land.
Okay.
I would hunt the public around my land. Okay.
Interesting idea.
Well, if you hunt, anybody can hunt the public.
Sure.
Right?
Yep.
So if you establish your own as a safe haven, the animals will congregate to that area that they feel safe. You hunt the public around, and there might be some public land hunters that might, you know, be kind of gritting their teeth at me right now.
Yeah.
But if I were to hunt around, then that also discourages other hunters that think, oh, here's a piece of private. I'm going to hunt next to it.
Sure.
You know, I'm going to try to get these animals that are not pressured during season, so I'm going to hunt next to it. Well, you're going to have that.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And a hunter can only be one place at a time.
Mm-hmm.
But if you pick a spot, you make your presence known, you know, you're regularly in and out right there, you know, eventually you're going to have the area around your property kind of as your domain as well.
Yeah. Very interesting. Ben, the man for land, Ben Parsons with RE/MAX Property Pros, our guest today. We wanted to talk a little bit about some of the handfuls of property that you have. You said you had three or four nice parcels, Ben, that you are dealing with right now.
We've got a few listings that I think are important to bring up.
Okay.
And, you know, one in particular that I wanted to bring up. Now, this is not a large hunting parcel. This is actually a 1.4-acre lot on the north side of Merrill. What makes this parcel interesting is that when you pull it off the driveway, you're kind of up on a hill. And there is a garage there. I believe it's a 4-bay garage. And from the outside, a person might think, well, it's not much more than a shed. But when you go in that, it's a nice concrete floor, nice heated insulated bays. You know, if a person put some siding around this, it would be an absolutely beautiful garage.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a septic there. There's a well there. And it faces west. And the great thing about this western view is the Prairie River runs at the bottom of the hill.
Oh, very nice.
And being 1.4 acres and having that bottom land being mostly Lincoln County owned, and on the other side of the river, City of Merrill Park,
mm-hmm.
you've got this big open western view with very little development in that view facing these sunsets from up on top of the hill. And sure, a person needs to go in and clear a little brush, and the building site's already there. It's a nice level hilltop facing west. We've shown it a few times. I can't believe this thing is still on the market, and I do know that the sellers are motivated. So right now we're asking $69,000 for it, but I do really encourage folks, give us a call. Let's go look at it. I'll walk you around all the high points of the property. We can walk right down to the river. And this is not a river lot. I do want to point that out. It is not a waterfront lot, but it does overlook the Prairie River and have that full river bottom view. And I do know the sellers are motivated, so if someone has a number in mind, let's put it on paper and see if we can get that switched over, to get the land ownership switched over to.
Yeah, sounds like a nice property.
It's a beautiful property.
Yeah.
We've got another one over by Summit Lake.
Okay.
And it's about 2 miles from the public beach area on Summit Lake. If you take County Highway T off of 45 there, just a short ways, you'll see Docks Road that heads north. And Docks Road is a dead-end road. This is the second property on the left, I believe. And it also starts out nice high on a hill, and then it drops off into a lower area. And there is a little corner of a grassy marsh that creeps into this property. But the majority of it is all high, hilly land. And the hill, of course, you could face west there as
sure,
well.
Sure.
And ATV right over to the Summit Lake Public Beach. You know, this, it's a little over 10 acres, 10 and a quarter acres. We've got that one at $75,000 right now, and there could be some wiggle room there, I think, depending on the terms of the offer.
Okay.
And I would encourage folks to come out and look at that one. One of the newer ones that I've put out is an 88 and a quarter acre lot out on Suring Lane. Now, Suring Lane comes off of County Highway S between Crandon and Hiles. And this property is, every bit of it is buildable. It's level, but it's buildable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got nice, sandy, gravelly soil. I would guess about 47, 48 acres of this is open field. It hasn't been planted in any crops. It hasn't been harvested for hay or anything like that. So beautiful pheasant habitat, if there's anyone out there that, nice. That are looking to, you know, raise and hunt pheasants. And the rest of it is in timber. That's right around that average, you know, 15 to 18-year-old aspen, birch, balsam, spruce, and with a strip of planted red pines on the west side. easy access right off of Highway S. Searing Lane is another dead-end private road, and electricity does run right through the middle of this property, so you can build on north side or the south side. And if 88 acres isn't enough, you can head south and keep on heading south, because that's national forest to the south, public land there. Hop across S, and you're on county forest.
Wow, a lot of land in that area.
A lot of land to roam over there, absolutely. Yeah,
good. We're just about out of time, Ben. I looked at the clock, and we're a minute away from 10, so we need to wrap up. But very informative today. Thank you so much for all the information that you've given us, and I know there's some things that we didn't have a chance to talk about, but you'll visit with Jeff coming up the first part of February here, the first Monday of February, and we'll look forward to that conversation as well. But the best way to get a hold of you, as you mentioned, a text or a phone call to 550-5683. That's 550-5683. And of course, Ben the Man for Land, is that at gmail.com or is that?
Yes, it's a Gmail.
Good. So that's Ben the Man for Land at gmail.com.
Yep. And interesting enough, if folks want to do a little digging, take off the Gmail and just do BenTheManForLand.com and you'll get to my website.
Awesome. You've got it all figured out.
We try.
I think part of that has to do with Ann. I think she helps you a lot with that stuff.
Absolutely.
A pleasure, Ben. It's 10 o'clock. Have a great day. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Greg.